Yo. We are back from Vegas. We're ready to do preferred lines for the RBC Heritage. Got tons of Masters takes. Got a great show lined up for you. I'm still awake. We're still moving. I've got enough energy to finish this show. I hope you bear with me. Here's preferred lines.
Full nine iron for him. They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Idoni. At Tour Picks is the place you can find me on X, and you have stumbled upon the Preferred Lines Golf Podcast. We are streaming live right now on Twitter and on YouTube. I would prefer, though, if you would jump on over to the Preferred Lines YouTube page, give that a little subscribe, hop in there, join the chat with us. We're going to do some master superlatives like high school yearbook style. So if you have any submissions, please drop them in the chat while we're going through some of the ones we want to cover. We're going to cover the RBC Heritage course preview, give some picks, talk a little Masters. Brought my boy Ian here to do it with me. Let's get it going. Before I start, though, have to mention this show is proudly presented by the good people over at Rotoballer. Where's my little scroll here? There we go. Good people at Rotoballer. Promo code is LINES, LINES, as a little nod to this show. And that's going to get you 10% off any PGA premium sub for the remainder of the season. You're going to get access to my boy Ian's course preview. You're going to get my stuff. You're going to get Model Maniac Spencer, Joe Nicely, the entire team, full on access. You get in the Discord as well. It is well worth it. I think it brings it down to like $6 or $7 a month. I'm not sure if the promo code Masters is working too, but feel free to use that. That'll get you 30% off. Plug that one in first. If it doesn't work, use Lines. We'd love to have you over there. Join the team with us. So quick note before we get started, I haven't slept since Saturday. Jumped on, went to recorded a live show last night with Pat and Jeff from the Circa. We then went to dinner. I then went to the airport. Listen, this was the first time I tried the red eye thing. Not for me, okay? I thought maybe it would work out and I could just sleep on the way back. I couldn't, maybe got 20 minutes of sleep on the entire flight back. I'm so uncomfortable. I'm 6'4". It's hard to sit in airplane seats. It's a bunch of people that smell leaving Vegas. It was brutal. Got in, went straight into work. Now I'm here. We are powering through. I've drank enough energy drinks today to last me for the week, but we're ready to go. Thank you for joining us here on the show. Now, without further ado, I'm excited to talk to my guest tonight. It's been a long time coming. We had some things where I was supposed to go on his show. I got sick. Things didn't work out. But here, welcoming in for his debut on Preferred Lines at Flag Hunting _ Hunting on Twitter, Ian McNeil. What's up, brother?
Man, you have I envy the energy, man. After not sleeping since Saturday, I was going to come on here and bitch and moan about getting like 4 hours of sleep last night. But man, you're putting me to shame here. I've got my energy drink, water, some sweet tea. So I think we're all kind of feeling the effects of the Masters hangover, but 3 days until another elevated event and $20 million up for grabs on the PGA Tour.
It was a big week in Vegas for the boys. UFC 300 was there as well. We got Pat. Pat Mayo is the best. He hooked it up with a little room. Derek, the guy who owns the Circa, is like up in there lingering around. Jeff, I got to talk real quickly, quick Vegas story. Jeff Feinberg had possibly the worst beat of any bet I've ever seen in my life. So did you watch UFC, Ian?
I think I know where this is going. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. He had Max Holloway to win in 5 rounds. Like, I don't know how the bet is called. I'm not really into UFC, but he basically just didn't need a knockout. 1 second left. Incredible moment. He took it pretty well. But it was the UFC guys, Cody and Paul, that were there that do Pat's show, were like, that is as bad of a beat in the UFC as you will ever see. But my man took it on the chin. He bounced back. He hit some soccer corner kick parlays. He was all over the place. We had a great time. Shout out to Pat for bringing me out there and being a gracious, awesome host.
Yeah. When in Vegas, right? You gotta bet the 10 a.m. soccer games. And I'm an Arsenal fan. So Sunday did not get off to a very good start for me after watching our boys lose 2-0 at home to Villa. But Yeah, vibes were high, as I saw on Twitter all week long. I know Pat was cashing in on 10 leg parlays on Friday afternoon. So, yeah, I mean, that's – I mean, you're talking to a guy that literally got into the space because, like, listened to Pat and Jeff on Monday morning for, you know, years all throughout college. So, yeah, that's, like, legit, like, a make-a-wish thing for for someone like me, you know.
Absolutely, man. It's awesome to have you on. Everyone who's checking out this show should go check out the Flag Hunting Pod as well. You do a great job over there. Your course previews are as thorough as anyone that I know, and I'm excited to have you on the show. You want to do some Masters superlatives, like yearbook style? I kind of got this idea. What do you think?
Absolutely, man. Let's let it rip.
All right, let's start here. I'll tee you up first, and then I'll give mine. The 2024 Masters Yearbook Superlatives. By the way, anyone in the chat, feel free to submit someone if you have an answer to this. But let's start here. Biggest loser of the week from the 2024 Masters is?
Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. Okay, give me I got 10 I want to get through, so let's do a quick little 1 minute. Give me a rip. It'll give me a spicy ramen noodle quick hot take.
Yeah, I'm known for being a bit long-winded, so don't feel bad for cutting me off. My co-host is doing it every single week. So biggest loser for me, Rory. I mean, we talked all week long heading into the Masters about his press conferences on discipline, right? Yeah, Butch Harmon's magic touch heading into the Masters. He's calling a shot in the media. When he's listing off all the Masters champions, he goes 2024. Rory McIlroy, it's out of fever pitch in terms of the hype. You know, we're hoping that he could be the guy to topple Scotty. And not only is he completely irrelevant at Augusta again, but he gets dog walked by Scheffler the first 2 days. He loses by 10 over the first 36 holes. And another year goes by where he doesn't even sniff contention for the Grand Slam. Joe, do you know how long it's been since Rory McIlroy has started a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday at Augusta within 5 shots of the lead?
Oh, God. 8 years?
It's 6. It's okay. since his Sunday duel with Patrick Reed.
He was way back when he surged in the second. Way back.
Correct. So he has not entered a round 2, 3, or 4 within 5 shots of the lead in 6 years. And next year, we arrive in 2025. He'll be nearly 36 years old. I think Rory's going to age gracefully. You know, he's pretty injury-free. Got a smooth, flowing swing, balanced game. But, you know, it's been a while since he's given his fans anything to kind of hang on to at Augusta. So just another point for Rory. T24 means nothing, absolutely. And this
nothing. Rory's a good one. I thought about Rahm, who was my big pick for the week. Yeah. I also wanted to honorable mention, nominate biggest loser of the week to the idiot who knocked the protein bar out of my boy Ludwig's hands after he goes birdie, and then he subsequently hits it right in the water. My man just needed a little protein in his system. Keep your hands to yourself. Patrons should have kicked that guy out on the spot. Biggest loser of the week, Victor Hovland. Vic is broken. I'm sad. I was reading right before we came on hot here that he's now involved and been name is tossed into live rumors. I think it's been there before, but I've never seen a guy who was number 2 or 3 in the world and win the tour championship 7 months later be so self-deprecating about his game heading into the week, basically saying he has no chance. Yeah. Coming out and shooting a 32 on the opening 9. Something happened on 10 where I still don't understand why he took an unplayable. I even went back and looked at the app before we went hot here to see where that ball landed up. It must have been bad, but just a complete implosion. He had the moment that is so cringeworthy where he tried to brush in the putt and missed it. Now he's withdrawn from the RBC. The man is totally broken down to the studs right now. I hate to see it, but I can't think of anyone else who was a bigger loser on the week than Victor. Sucks.
What do you think Victor goes off at the PGA?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that's an awesome course fit for him.
Yeah.
If we don't see him until then, it could get to 55.
Yeah.
I think I took a 45 late at Circa. They had it up there when I got in. Jeff actually bet it for me. I'm like, this is high. I don't care what he says. It can't be that bad. And I'm feeling real good about it after that opening 9 when he hit every single green in regulation. It wasn't meant to be. All right, next one. Superlative Masters 2024. Class clown. Who do you got?
I got Xander, but only because it's just it's so predictable. I mean, we all came into last week. He was the most tipped on all the charts, de facto second best player in the world after Scotty, playing some of his best golf for from a statistical standpoint. And like, what does he do? Like, he does exactly what every detractor said he would do, right? Like, he comes in, finishes inside the top 10 without ever sniffing contention. Even like, cause he started at 200 par on Sunday, made birdie on two. And, yeah, you know, Scotty and Colin start off slow, right? Scotty missed his first two greens, including the par five fifth. Colin missed a couple make birdie putts. And we're like, okay, here's a chance for some of these two unders, one unders, maybe to vault themselves within two shots of the lead. And what does Xander do? He makes his first bogey in 29 holes, back to back, mind you, and settles back into T9, where he remained for the rest of the day. So it's just, I think a lot of the Xander hype last week was due to like sheer desperation. Like, we're just trying to find somebody that could hang with Scotty. And we saw it obviously at the Players over 4 days. But man, it put like Xander's just the same guy he's always been. And
I feel you on Xander. I feel you on Xander. If you were there for the bet, it had to be even more painful because he kind of just lingered. I've got Xander later in this in a minute here, but class clown of the week, clown show of the Masters, has to be Zach Johnson. I mean, did anyone make a bigger fool out of themselves than ZJ? This guy is the absolute worst. I'm embarrassed that he was the captain of our Ryder Cup team. I hope he's never a vice captain again. I hope they don't let him back at Augusta National for cursing out the fans. I'll go overboard on any take you want to go to on Zach Johnson. Kick him off the tour, Doug. Like, we don't need this guy here anymore. We don't need, he did it at the Waste Management. Now he's doing it at Augusta National. Keep your mouth shut. Play shitty golf to the point where you're no longer going to be invited to these events except the Masters. You'll get the defending champion, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just so over Zach Johnson and his – and then he lied about it. It's just such a bad look. You're a clown, ZJ. Get out. Get out.
What is he doing? Like, I feel like ZJ was one of the more popular, like, captain's picks of the last, like, 10, 15 years. Like, he – throughout his career, he kind of always seemed like a stand-up guy and a guy that, you know, could maybe rally you, like a very Stricker-esque type of character. And like in the last 6 months, he's done nothing but just completely undo 20 years of good faith that golf fans have put into him. Like, I was a fan of Zach Johnson. I feel like
it's downhill. It's downhill, and somebody cut the brakes. All right, next one. 2024 Masters superlatives. Biggest flirt. So the person or the player who teased you the most, I'll go first on this one, Ian, because I'm going to take Xander, who you just talked about. Okay. Such a tease all week long, the way that he scrambled and the way that, you know, he didn't go over par on the opening day or day two, under par day three. If it wasn't for a birdie on his 72nd hole, he wouldn't have played a single round under par. Yet, never really in it, right? Never made that run. He doesn't have, I want to see the next gear, and it just doesn't seem to be there. Like, he'll get first, second, third, but can't put it into fourth gear when he really needs to. He has every tool. The shot that he hit on 18, the one day to scramble out of there, like, he can pull off things that nobody else can pull off. There's really no weakness in his game except that doesn't have the next gear. Biggest tease of the week, Xander Schauffele for me. Who do you got?
Yeah, to build on the Xander thing, I mean, like, as a Xander ticket holder, I woke up Sunday morning like, this is perfect. Like, we just got to go out there. How many times has Xander fired a stress-free 65 and just coasted into fifth place? All we need is Scotty to stick in neutral, some of these guys to go down the leaderboard, and all of a sudden Xander's at -9 in the clubhouse, and we're like, we're smoking and joking. It's the same Ricky
Coyle. And the thing is, if he got to -9, those guys see that at that point, and they've got to play 12. They've got to play 15. They've got to play 13. They've got to play 11, and he's in. He's in. So, like, he could have really applied some pressure. It wouldn't have mattered with Scotty, right? But you never know. I just wanted him to make that run. Byron, like, Cam Smith was right there for me on this one for biggest flirt. He couldn't make a putt. And it felt like he just teased us all week long because he actually was sticking iron shots. Cam Smith, and this probably isn't even a hot take, but give me right now, pencil it in, Cam Smith will win a Masters. Like, he's going to put on a green jacket. He has the around the green game that you look of every. The Masters rewards special talent and guys who have magic beans and can scramble like none other. When you have Bubba Watson, when you have Phil Mickelson, when you have Jordan Spieth, these are guys with multiple jackets. When you have Patrick Reed, when you have even Scotty's top three around the green player in the world at chipping. Yeah. Cam Smith will win a green jacket.
Yeah, I had him at 66-1, which I thought was an absurd number.
Yeah.
We got all the ball striking we wanted to. It was just, waiting on that 2022 spike performance on the greens. My biggest flirt, Colin Morikawa. I mean, he's my favorite player on tour, so maybe I was just really, really eager to buy the narrative of, a two-time major winner, giving the FU to recent form, cashing a 40-1 plus ticket, for the third leg of his Grand Slam. And honestly, man, through eight holes, I mean, I didn't really have – after Xander made bogey, I was like, I'm pretty much done. I'm just rooting for fan interest at this point. I wanted him or Max to win. And really didn't put a foot wrong through eight holes. I thought he was unlucky, really, to not be maybe in the lead at that point in the round. And then, of all things, the driver puts him out of the tree on nine, short-sizes himself in the bunker, gets too cute, as Colin is kind of prone to do when he has kind of an awkward bunker shot. Yeah. And all of a sudden, 30 minutes later, we're out of the Masters. Yeah. So.
He talked post round. He's like, I got greedy on like 9 and 10. And like, it's just Scotty doesn't get greedy. He doesn't do that. He hits his shots and he shapes it to the safe part where he knows, like, if I overhook it or if I overcut it, like, he just doesn't make mental errors like almost all of those guys made coming down the stretch, which was one singular mental error. And he doesn't do it. And it's part of, like, Ted Scott talked before Sunday. He was like, I don't know what the question was, but he was like, I think Scotty's superpower is this. Like, it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but his superpower is he can make mistakes. He washes everything clean, and he does not ever compound them.
And it goes both ways, because Colin knows that, and Ludwig knows that, and Max knows that. And so they know, like, Scotty's not going backwards. Scotty's lead was what, 7 under par. Like, you got to get to 7. Like, there's no collapse in Scotty Scheffler. Like, I know the putter can get cold. I know he's, anyone can make a bogey around Augusta, but over the course of 72 holes, like, it's just very rare to see that 9-hole stress that takes Scotty out of the tournament. Even when he goes bogey, he comes back, he's steadfast. He'll stick an iron to a foot, or he'll make like a long bomb or chip in. Like, it's just,
He
forces these guys' hands, and Colin, after missing, premium birdie chance after premium birdie chance, and watching Scotty get up and down when he's not playing his best. And I think the one time Colin just needed to be a bit sensible, his aggression got the best of him, and he kind of had to press because he was like, man, I got to do something special to beat this guy.
Yeah, and it was interesting. So Jeff, Pat, and I did a recap show, and we talked at length, and you can go watch that over on Mayo Media Net, about, like, where do you put Scotty right now? Where do you rank him all time? And you can debate it. And, he's about to have a kid. So this can all, like, that is something like that could very much be a little bit of a hurdle for him to jump over. I don't know totally where I stand on it right now, but one of the most telling things, Ian, is listen to how other players talk about him. There's no doubt that he is not an intimidating figure, but they are intimidated by his game. Like, listen to what Wyndham and Xander talked about at the Players' Championship when we were there coming down the stretch, how they're paying close attention. When Scotty's coming, he's listen to what, like, Rory is enamored with this guy right now, Scotty Scheffler. Like, listen to Max Homa's comments, and even Colin Morikawa post-round. I found it very interesting that his word selection, and maybe I'm taking this a bit out of context, but he was like, I don't know the exact verbiage, but he said something along the lines is like, I know that I have to close the gap in between me and Scotty. And I don't think he was talking about distance. I think he's talking about these players recognize that he has a gap between them. And it's not often that you're going to hear a two-time major champion that young talk about a gap between him and the other guy in the final pairing with him. It's not often that you're going to hear these players just gush over someone that they're playing with, and they're intimidated by his game, and they really believe there's a gap. I sent out a joking tweet. There was something with Tom Kim, like, paying him out. And I'm like, do these guys ask for strokes against him? Because they legit, like, they know that he's better than them at everything. And they know his one kryptonite is a 7-foot putt. but it doesn't matter. They understand that there is a gap between him and the next best player, and we can kind of see it. I don't know how big that is, but the players get it, and these are top players in the world, understand that they may be second, and it's not particularly close.
I was going to bring this up in a later time, but because we're on the Scotty thing, I mean, obviously, like, the all-time conversation will have to wait for a few years. Of course, mm-hmm. He's only got two majors. Like, he's still 27. There's still so much that can happen. But I think what there should be conversations about is perhaps the best season ever. We're talking about, we're nine events into the season. He's won three times, three elevated events in a major, mind you.
Four in a row. That could have been four in a row without that missed putt in Houston.
Four top sixes in addition to the three wins. No finish worse than 17th. He's now gained strokes putting in his last four starts since switching to the mallet. And, I mean, like, where's his competition? Look across both tours. Like, if Scotty brings his best, he's winning any event on the planet by four. And I'll circle back to it. He had his second worst approach week of his season and won the Masters by four. Mm-hmm. He gained only 3.1 on approach, which is, like, below his 20-round baseline.
Right.
So he underperformed with his iron play and won the Masters by four.
There was at one point, I'm not sure which hole it was. It may have been when they were playing eight, where there was a four-way tie. And it wasn't a four-way tie with just anyone. It was Homa. It was Ludwig charging. It was Colin Morikawa. And it was Scotty. And he beat third place by a touchdown. He won by seven. Like, he understood that when he took the lead, like, I know you do, like, some NASCAR stuff. Like, it reminded me of, like, when a guy gets in first and he's like, some people I feel like will take that lead and move by a car, and they're kind of got their eyes on the rear view. Like, who's back there? Who's making a move? Like, he gets up there and it's pedal to the floor. It's gas down and it's come and fucking catch me. I don't care what you're doing behind me, because I'm about to go on a freaking birdie run here. And it's impressive to see, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, he's something I haven't seen, and I've been involved with, you know, golf betting for, you know, almost 6, 7, 8 years now. You know, I've seen Jason Day go on his run through 2016, 2017, DJ, Roy, they've all had great runs, Kepka, great runs, but it's like every week you have to come up with reasons why this guy is going to finish fourth instead of first, because those are the two options.
Yep. All right, Mulligan moment, the award for Mulligan moment. So basically the one shot that a player could want back. I'll go first.
Yeah.
I have Max Homa on 12. The reason I'm saying that is So Ludwig and Colin had the things on 11 where they went in the water.
Yeah.
That was just a really poor shot by both of them. I kind of think Homa got a bad break on 12. Like, he hit the green and it just, like, almost felt like it hit a sprinkler head the way it jumped off the green and into that bush and ejected him out of the tournament. Was it a miss hit? Yes. Did he maybe miss by 5 feet and get absolutely screwed in that situation? I also think yes. That was a rough moment for Max Homa, and I would like to see him get that shot back. What about you?
Yeah. As much as I'm like, I did say Ludwig on 11, but
yeah,
after Colin ejected, like, I only ever thought Max was going to catch him. Like, I really was never in full belief. Even after Ludwig made the birdie on 9, you know, I was never really in, like, oh, Ludwig could win the Masters. I thought Max could win the Masters. With the way he was putting, you know, it was just like anything inside 8 feet all week felt like it was just right in the dead center. And, you know, he hadn't made a bogey in God knows how many holes on the weekend, right? So you just felt like if Max could just sustain this and not make any mistakes, you could just maybe allow Scotty a bit of rope just to hang himself on a really treacherous back nine. And you're right. Like, Max got hosed on 12 and took a lot of the drama, especially after Ludwig hit his second 11. But
all right, a few more here. Master superlatives, life of the party. Who do you got?
I mean, there's one answer here, right? It's Bryson.
It's Bryson. Yes. Yeah. I love Bryson, man. I miss him so much. There's so much going on, from picking up the post to, I imagine, like in my head, like him with like some like work goggles on, like chiseling these irons when he's got them on like one of those little blades that spin around. He's playing his own clubs he manufactured. I kind of didn't like this when I first saw it. I was like, this feels sketchy to me. Like, I feel like if he were to win, I do feel like other players may have called him out on it and been like, whoa. So these are like AI created to like help your off center hits. But then I saw some stuff like players have always done this. Like players going back have like made their own golf clubs. So he's so rooted in like the history of the game. I actually think it's cool that he did this. Yeah. He's so entertaining. He's so electric. He had the round of the week opening day. I just want Bryson around in majors. It's just fun, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if anything, it was the putting that really did him in. I mean, he was ball striking the hell of it.
And the chipping, like the couple of uphill chips, and people are going to rip him because he has the longer clubs. But there was one on 15, and I forget the other hole where uphill lie trying to chip, and he just like chunked it. Like it that was a tough scene for him.
Yeah, it was on 3, wasn't it? I think it was like Sunday too.
On 3,
yeah,
yes. I remember
that now. But yeah,
he dismantles holes. Did you see what he did on 8? Like he hit it like there's that bunker that are catching players. He hit it like 60 yards past it. He can absolutely do incredible things. I really like his attitude now. Like it feels like he is finally comfortable with who he is. Like it felt all the other versions of Bryson, whether it was like the Byron Nelson hat or you know what I'm talking about, or beef, like it all felt forced. It felt like he's finally like just who he is and he's comfortable with himself. And it's fun to watch him golf, man.
That was my best moment, was seeing Bryson kind of come into his own and really be like very jovial with the media and not really take himself too seriously. It really felt like, again, he just seems really at peace with the decision he made. There's not really a hint of any regret there. And he even admitted to learning a lesson in humility, you know, through his past trials and tribulations at Augusta. Right. And you know, he's 30 years old now. I think he's matured. And I mean, he's like just talking about purely golf. Like he's driving the ball as well as anybody on the planet right now. You know, there was a time where I think the fact that he could really get sideways around Augusta really hurt him despite his immense length. He's really tightened that up. He's one of the straighter drivers, especially for how long he hits it. Finished above field average and driving accuracy in each of his last 3 events. So I've got a 66
he'll try anything. He's there to make his own playbook for every place he goes. He'll try to hit it in places. He'll be in spots you've never seen anyone else. There was I don't know that I've ever seen TIO, like immovable object relief at Augusta. It just the way that their course is set up, you just don't really get in those areas. Like, of course, Bryson finds it on like multiple holes where they're moving. He's got officials follow. Like it's just he's just fun. He's fun.
I will say, what's your opinion on TIO on 3, left of 3?
I don't love it. I know that there was a sketchy situation that I heard about with Scotty, right?
Second time in 3 years.
He finds himself, man.
Second time in 3 years. It happened in 21 as well, or 22.
He finds himself often, I do feel like, in these sketchy situations a bit there. And then there was the one on 2 where he got an extreme break he didn't pull it off, but he got to move his ball to like a perfect angle because he's in the walkway and then he's behind and there's like a 7-year-old boy that's like telling him he's fine, like you didn't touch it.
Yeah, he didn't touch it. Yeah.
So it's interesting. All right, let's keep it moving. What do we want to do next? All right, let's do best moments of the Masters for you. Your favorite singular moment.
Again, like I just kind of alluded to it. I think Bryson's just weak as a whole, I think I think honestly, you take Bryson out of this equation, it's a pretty dull Masters. I know Scotty like deserves to be crowned. He deserves to be the best player in the world, but there was really not a lot of Sunday drama. There really wasn't like a signature shot for me, maybe like 9 or 10 for Scotty. But I feel like I was already kind of done with that at that point. For me, it was Bryson number one carrying the signage post. And then again, just a new invigorated Bryson who feels like, you know, he's kind of figured this place out. No one's going to be, you know, looking to call him dead money at Augusta in the future anymore. And, you know, for those of y'all that maybe have some investment in Valhalla in a month or so, I think he's very live for that. So that's fine.
It's a good bet if you're already in there, because I want a piece. I'm sure there are a lot of people that will want a piece in Valhalla. So this was hard for me. I'm kind of between two. I think the best. So the one that I had was, I thought it was pretty cool of Scotty when he walked off 18 to sort of call Ted and let him walk in front. There's so many like endearing things about Scotty, and yeah. The religious stuff aside, because I know people either love or hate that. He's so down to earth. He's so real. Yeah. And I don't know why it is that I really can't fully get behind like cheering for his greatness, because there are other guys in the past that I've done it for. And maybe that he's so likable. Like there's people that didn't like Tiger. There's people that didn't like Brooks. There's people that didn't like Jordan. Like every great player, like there's tons of people that love him, but there's also haters, right? It's right. Hard to really have that with Scotty. I thought that was a really cool moment though, to sort of give Ted a shine. Ted's fourth caddying jacket, which is pretty awesome. But you know, I don't really get suckered into these moments too much, but when I saw the pictures, like the Tiger and Vern thing,
that was
a pretty cool moment. And I love Vern Lundquist. He's incredible to see Tiger walk over there. He obviously knew what he was doing. And just those pictures, I feel like I'm going to remember. Like if someone could show you that picture of a hand sticking out behind a tree, Ian, in 20 years, and you'll be like, that was Vern Lundquist. Like we will remember that, even though you don't see his face, you just literally see his arm. We'll remember that moment. So biggest winner. We did biggest loser earlier. Let's wrap it up. I'll let you go first. Biggest winner of the 2024 Masters. There's an obvious one, but do you have anything other than Scotty maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to go with Scotty. I'll go with Ludwig. Let's give Ludwig a shout out here, right? Yes. First major start, a venue where no debutant has won in 45 years. You know, all of us were saying, you know, maybe he's better at short courses. And then 24 years old, out of Texas Tech, finishes third in total ball striking, first in strokes gained putting, clears the group in third by three shots. I mean, he just proved everything right. You know, all of his doubters right, and all of his fans right. Got that in reverse, but you guys know what I mean. This kid is an absolute stud. He's, you know, he's gained like 30 shots of ball striking in his last three starts between Sawgrass, Augusta, and Valero. Has a legitimate claim now. I think he's the top five player on the planet. And I mean, if you just want to go, I know Feinberg was he was a big Ludwig guy over the weekend, and I think he released a tweet that was like, I'm just gonna,
he had 100-1. He had 100-1.
Sick ticket. But
it's Ludwig for me too, and it's not particularly close. I mean, obviously Scotty, but the kid made himself a bazillion dollars. There were people walking around like in the sports book, like who, like he's just got it all, man. He's got the smile, he's got the charm, he looks like a freaking model out there, he's got the distance, he doesn't miss shots. He seems to be so cool and casual that
poised
after the moment on 11, like to just kind of shake that off, I thought was really cool. You know, everything's in front of him. Ludwig can sell me anything. Like it's all Adidas, but like his sponsorship, whoever his agent phone has to be ringing off the hook today for someone to get on that collar. I joked that Ludwig could do a cringeworthy selfie video trying to sling me a DraftKings promo code, and I'd make a new account just to give Ludwig his props. Like he could sell me anything right now, and I'm buying it using promo code Aberg. He's awesome. So cool to see him. He's going to be around for a very long time, and he's a problem. If you could give me 18-1 on him in majors for the next 5 years, sign me up right now. I'll sign that ticket. It's awesome.
The thing is, Joe, like 18-1, not just like anywhere. Give me 18-1 Ludwig, like actually anywhere, right? Because he came out of college with this amazing driving pedigree. We all saw the potential at places like Torrey Pines or Quail Hollow, Augusta, whatever it may be, but you know, runner-up finishes at Pebble Beach, right? He won his title at RSM. He won his European title at the Omega Masters, a 6,800-yard golf course in Kranz. So it's just like there's no golf course on the planet where he comes onto and there's no chance of winning, you know. And of course, man, he's 24 years old. He's young. He's skilled. He's fearless. Course proof. What more could you want out of a blue chip talent? So he'll be a worthy contender for a long time.
Donnie had a good one there. Let's do one more. Most likely to succeed, because this is always one in the superlatives. Donnie had a good one there with Nikolai Højgaard. I think Ludwig's obvious, but still to me, most likely to succeed at Augusta National, who hasn't yet, is still Will Zalatoris. like a T9 finish. He's so solid. A sixth place, a second place in his three Masters besides the one where he withdrew. He was third in strokes gained tee to green. He was 49th in putting this week. He's going to figure that place out. He's going to win multiple majors, and he's going at some point to put on a green jacket. He's too good. This was the worst form he's shown up in any of those Masters, and still a relatively easy T9, minus three on Sunday. Will Zalatoris will succeed at the Masters. Who do you got?
Yeah, you start to put together, you know, we all do it, right? Like for each generation, we all kind of pick out the players that we're kind of riding or dying for. They're going to win a green jacket at some point. Zalatoris clearly fits that mold. I would throw his Wake Forest boy Cam Young in that mold. Yep. And honestly, I'm going to throw Colin Morikawa in that mix as well.
I mean, like it.
You talk about a guy that had absolutely no recent form. I mean, I'm a Colin Morikawa stand through and through, and even I had no interest at 40, 50 to one, whatever number he got into last week. And he comes out and just major championship under the radar and has his best approach week since, I think, winning the Zozo last year. And there's something to this, like, short game splits with Colin Morikawa and Augusta. He's never lost strokes around the greens at Augusta National in four starts. Never lost strokes to putting in four starts around Augusta. So clearly there's something there with the on and around the green play. And when you carry his ball striking ceiling, I mean, it's easy to kind of paint the picture that he's going to be
it with multiple players there, the around the green and the putting. Sometimes they just figure it out. Okay. Those are your master superlatives. Thank you for participating in that exercise with me, Ian. Let's get to a little course preview. Harbortown Golf Links on tap this week. One of my favorite courses on tour, always brings the drama. Great for chasers. I think if you look at six of the last 10 years, someone has come from three back or more on Sunday to win this event. Obviously a shorter golf course. We know that 7,200 yards. You wrote an amazing course preview up today that really dives into the stats on it. A lot of approach shots from 175-ish range because of the narrow fairways. And what happens is they're so tree lined and dog legs that really what players end up doing is they end up hitting into the same landing areas, which turns a par four into a par three. And they hit 180 yard shots from the same spot. And it's who can hit these tiny greens, which are the second tiniest on tour. They also have those runoffs. And who can get to 15 feet? I like opportunities gained this week as a stat. I think course history is sticky here. It's a little bit player dependent, but for some guys, they really have this place figured out. Yep. You have to be comfortable shaping shots both ways. I want some player who is a shot maker. And here's the interesting one that I have, Ian, that I wasn't anticipating to see. When you look at the last three winners, Matt Fitzpatrick, Jordan Spieth, Stewart Cink. My gut would have told me, had I not looked at the stats, they're all amazing putters. They crushed it with the flat stick and around the green that week. Not necessarily the case. Fitzpatrick was third in tee to green. Spieth was first in
tee to green putting
on that week. Lost strokes putting. And Stewart Cink was first in tee to green that week. Yeah. It's kind of a very sneaky spot where I think a lot of people will devalue off the tee this week and just think it's going to be a putting contest when really the stats on a short term sort of looking at us, you know, honing in the microscope the last 3 years, at least it has really been a really strong tee to green test. Chasers are live. Tournament always brings drama. Those are kind of some of my basic notes about Harbortown. I love this place. You got anything to add there, pal?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's well stated with kind of the weighing you're putting on course history. I'll go maybe a step further than that. I'll say that comp course history, I think we see a lot of these, you know, like there's genres on the PGA Tour, right? There's your big boy championship level golf courses, your Torrey Pines, Bay Hill, Muir Hill Village, et cetera. And then there's also a collection of, you know, if you write course previews every week, like I do, how many times do you use the words short, Bermuda grass, par 70, positional, right? Like Sea Island.
Waters,
Wedge, Wiley, Innisbrook, PJ National, right? Mayakoba back when it was a thing, right? So I think you can definitely take a lot of correlation, not just from past heritage leaderboards, but we've seen a lot of crossover success between a lot of those events. River Highlands is another one that features a lot of crossovers. Pete Dye Design, short golf course, moderate rough penalty. I would look not only again at course history, but some comp course stuff. And particularly when you talk about driving, because this is just such a different driving test than we're typically used to on the PGA Tour, where length is everything. And especially on a week like last week of the Masters, where everyone's most weight driving stat was usually carry distance or some auxiliary stat of that. And I think if you can narrow down, not necessarily, you know, fairways gained or good drive gained, which are, you know, I think important stats this week, but guys that have routinely shown an acumen on these positional driving tests, because again, you have to be smart. You have to be disciplined, play the quarter of the dog leg and take kind of the 160, 70 yard approach that Pete and I kind of gave you 50 years ago. So, yeah, off the tee splits at RBC Heritage, off the tee splits at River Highlands, Sedgefield, Wylie, et cetera. I think those kind of stats go a long way this week.
Yeah, I think I like Innisbrook as my favorite comp. They're both coastal courses, but you don't really feel that when you're on them. They're both like a few miles from the coast, but they're very tree-lined. They talk about Innisbrook feeling very much like a Carolina course. The other thing that I noticed is, like, right at the you know, those other courses, Wylie and PGA National a little bit, players have started to really deploy driver a lot more at those courses. Wylie players are cutting it over the dog legs. PGA National doesn't really, while the fairways are narrow, the further you go down, they don't really pinch in further. What happens at this course, and I noticed it at Innisbrook too, the fairways are already narrow at 250 yards, which is a common landing area here where most players hit it. It's around 30 yards wide. That's narrow. But at 300 yards, it's 21 yards wide. So you really can't hit driver. And that's the same way at Innisbrook. Those are the two narrowest courses on tour at the 300-yard mark. So while players have the old narrative, I think, was they're all positional tracks, players have started to sort of break that mold. Really good players who are hit it long and hit it straight, like Ludwig and these guys. I don't really think it's that advantageous at a course like this. You can catch a limb. It's all about position. And sometimes you'd rather be in the rough than the fairway here, because it's all about angles to a lot of these pin locations. And yeah, you can be in the fairway and be blocked out by some of those limbs. So it's a very interesting test. They cut the rough down this year, which is one of the things I saw in the GCSAA report, down to 2.5 this year. So the rough will be a little less penal, I anticipate, than recent years. But that's what we got on the course. You want to get some bets?
Let's do it, man.
Betting board, RBC Heritage. Guess who's the man up top? Scotty Scheffler, 4-1. Xander at 11-1. To me, it feels a little bit, Ian, like they've cut the numbers on some of these guys behind Scotty because they understand there seems to, like, I feel like they think a withdrawal could be coming. So yeah, they slashed him a couple points because they don't want to get absolutely burned and hang big numbers on the rest of the field. I don't know if he'll show up or not, but he's 4-1. Xander 11, Ludwig 14, Rory 14, Cantlay 16, Morikawa 20, Fleetwood 20. I'll stop there. Your favorite player in that range?
I mean, it's hard to hide from the fact that I did have Patrick Cantlay as my cover guy heading into Monday morning. I post the article at 8 a.m. It's kind of the perils of this kind of content that can really age out pretty fast. When I post the article, he was 25-1, down to 16 in spots now, which I'm not particularly interested in paying purely based on course history and a couple of holeouts at Augusta. So for me, at current market price, I mean, it's hard not to just lean into Ludwig. 14-1 seems like a pretty fair number. For a guy that, you know, had one of his best spell striking weeks of his career at TBC Sawgrass. We already talked about his acumen on shorter courses, be it Pebble Beach, Sedgefield, Sea Island in recent history. So, I think he's 24. He's still looking for that kind of marquee win. He's obviously contended a few times, but I think he'll be up for it. This week.
I missed the Cantlay. I would have loved it. Missed it this morning in travels. But I don't have anyone right now.
Yeah.
And this is kind of going against what I said earlier about this guy, but I might end up on Xander, man. Me and Pat and Jeff were talking, like, if Scotty were to withdraw last night, who's the favorite? Is it Rory? Is it Ludwig? Is it Cantlay? And I'm like, it's definitely Xander, and those have shown. Yeah. Eighth, fifth, second, his last couple of starts. He's doing everything so well, and it just feels like it's coming. And I picked up a lot from him at the Players, and I think it's a lot of credit to Chris Como that he's working with, where you would think the monkey on his back right now after not winning in 2 years would be a heavy burden to bear, but he seems very at peace with himself. I don't think the mentals are going to hurt him. The physical form is fantastic. He was fourth here last year. Even if Scotty does show and maybe is lacking a little bit of focus or preparation that could open the door for a potential player, one that is hungry and needs a win right now is Xander Schauffele, and he's playing the best, second best in the field, besides maybe you could put Ludvig there. The thing about Ludvig that I actually don't like him this week, that was the biggest week of his life.
Right.
And it's really hard to back that up a few days later and to soak it in. He seems like he's the type of guy that can do it. But I would say that a few years ago, Will Zalatoris finished second at the Masters, kind of out of nowhere during what was essentially his rookie year. And he came here to a course where he was familiar with growing up sort of in the area and playing college in the area, and finished 44th. And he talked after how it was just a lot to go through that experience, finishing second in your very first or second in your first Masters, finishing second and then coming out and playing top players a few days later. That was hard for him to manage. I imagine that it could maybe be a negative for Ludvig this week. I'm kind of drawn to Xander, but I haven't made the pull yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with it. I mean, we talked about the importance of a lot of kind of the short middle iron play. Nearly 50% of approach shots come from that 150 to 200 range. And over the last 12 months, the only player better than Xander Schauffele from that range, strokes gained wise, is Scottie Scheffler. So
yeah.
Xander, of course, I mean, he's almost like, I mean, like the projection with Xander is just like Scottie, but a little bit like pushed down the number line a little bit, where like, mm-hmm. you kind of know it's going to be like 11th at worst at this point, yeah. Xander, but yeah, I personally haven't bet Ludvig, and I honestly missed the 25s on Cantley too. I was also recovering a little bit this morning, yeah. trying to play some catch up. So I haven't made a bet on our 20-1 yet, but I could be convinced, especially considering I feel like if there ever was a venue where like you can make the case that Scotty's more likely to finish T6 than at the top, then it would be right here at Harbortown, where you're not going to be hitting 14 drivers around, right? It's some of the easiest green complexes to get the ball up and down around. And I understand the iron play is great, but I think two of his biggest advantages with his driver and his short game are a little bit mitigated around Harbortown.
Yeah. So in this next range, my boy Byron said this is also not a Willie Z course. It's easy to disagree with someone not in your live show, so I'm going to. I've got both Demon Deacons, and my thing is it's tee to green play. I think they're two of the best guys tee to green in the entire field. If that's going to showcase itself in recent winners as being the number one predictive stat over the last couple of years, Cameron Young and Will Zalatoris do that just as good about as anybody. Both, I think, are hungry again. Two players who I think will be just, it's going to turn into a long iron, like 180 to 190 yard shots over and over. And I want those two guys. So I took a 30 on, I believe, Willie. Yeah, 30 on Willie, 28 on Cam Young. Demon Deacons for me. Who you got? You got anyone after like the 30 to 50 range?
I don't. I honestly, I've started my betting card only with three names, and they start at 75 to 1. So I'm still kind of looking for some direction here. I will kind of back your Zalatoris move. Under 30 to 1, he's probably the most likely guy at 28 that I would be pointing to. We've seen a lot of like correlation between the week before and, you know, performances this week at Harbortown, particularly with the irons. You talked about Fitzpatrick came off his best approach week of the year at the Masters, then won the RBC Heritage the very next start. Stuart Sink was showing a lot of form leading in with the irons. Webb Simpson, same thing. And Zalatoris was fourth on approach last week at the Masters, also rates out fifth. Strokes gained per shot over his last 12 months in that key range, 150 to 200. So a lot of things for me point to Willie.
Here we go.
Obviously finished third here a couple years ago, so I definitely trust him.
And second at the Valspar, Cam Young, who I just said that was my favorite comp course a few weeks ago. Cam Young, I like him better than Willie, but I feel like it's coming for Zalatoris. And if I'm going to tee to green in this range, I still think he's one of the best. Joanne says Wyndham Clark top 10 elevated event. I mean, is there any argument to that narrative? Like it's hard to. I mean, I have nothing against it. There's nothing I can say. Like to take Wyndham Clark at the same price as Will Zalatoris or Cameron Young makes all the sense in the world, because those are two guys who haven't won in forever, and you're going against a prolific winner and a guy who shows up.
Yeah, a guy that is not afraid of the moment. We talk about, you know, if Scotty is that boogeyman once again and he's in the final group, like Wyndham is one of the few guys I kind of trust to stare him down in the outright market and maybe get it done. Obviously won at Pebble Beach earlier this year, so he's adept at short courses. I still do prefer Wyndham when he can, like, utilize his biggest assets. He is kind of similar to Scotty in the fact that I like Wyndham on courses you have to hit driver a lot, and that short game is a real, real, I think, barometer.
Yeah.
And this week,
Did he get injured?
Who, Wyndham?
I mean, he was talked about the injury at Houston. He finished 31st. He missed the cut at Augusta. I'm looking at the course history here. It's not great either. He's played it the last 5 years, and his best finish is a 29th. I don't know. He didn't play well at Augusta, and he didn't play well in Houston. Yes. And he talked about a back. Wasn't it back?
Yeah, it was a back injury in the gym, but he was still moving at like 190 ball speed in Houston.
Oh, so he crushes it, dude. And people don't give him enough credit for that. Like, I watched the range at the Players, and I don't think people talk. I think he's the longest player on tour. When he goes after it, I think he can hit it further than Rory or Ludwig. I mean, you got your Cam Champs in there, but he's not accurate enough. Like, Wyndham hits it so far, and they had the little thing on the driving range where they're posting, like, players' numbers from the range all week. You know what I mean? Because they've got the shot tracker on every player who's hitting shots. And ball speed, club head speed, longest drive of the week, all three of those things at the Players' Championship from the range was Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, and that length, like, it helps him in a lot of different ways, because we saw it at the Players' Championship where you did get some of those more difficult holes where hitting the fairway was paramount, like on 18, and he would just take 2-iron, 280 down the middle and have like 7-iron in, you know? So a lot of these, it's like the Bryson corollary, how Bryson was such a good long iron player when he was on tour because of his length. He just hit 9-iron when everyone else is hitting 7. I mean, Wyndham has proven that, you know, he shouldn't be doubted anywhere on tour.
Yeah, how about long shots? CMay 3111 says Keegan Bradley. Yes, I got Keegan. Yeah. I got 100-1 on Keegan. Let's see what he's at. That's yeah, 100-1's still out there, still available. I think it's a good course fit for him. And the other one I took at 75. Where is he? Okay, looks like 66 is the best number, is Cam Davis. Great week last week. I usually love Cam Davis on short courses with small greens. Maybe that can be statistically proven wrong, but that's just what it kind of lingers in my head when these courses pop up. It's like, play Cam Davis. Good showing last week. Does he have any decent course history?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Jesus Christ. 25th, 7th, 3rd. I didn't even know that when I made the bet. He's 3rd in strokes gained total per round here. 2nd in par 5 birdie or better rates. I'm looking at my model now. Cam Davis, I'm in on him and Keegan. Those are my two long shots. Who do you got?
Yeah, you're kind of taking the words out of my mouth with Cam Davis. He's a guy that's, you know, we talk about like corollary courses and driving on these shorter positional golf courses, Colonial, Innisbrook, Harbortown, whatever. And he's one of those guys that always climbs my driving ranks whenever we filter out for, you know, courses under 7,200 yards. So I bet Cam Davis at like every short Sony, you know, Amex, Harbortown golf course in on the tour in the last like 3 years. So won't hate that one bit. Why not Denny here? Why not Denny?
It's a FOMO bet. I'm going to take Denny 100%.
60-1. I mean, I feel like, you know, Valero is obviously a little more penal than Harbortown if you do miss the fairway, but very similar ethos in both those two golf courses, and really just kind of thinking your way around it, really avoiding trouble, just playing the proper shot off the tee. And then, I mean, dude, the approach rate was so dialed in over 4 days at Valero, and, you know, you're looking for an X factor on the greens.
There was a time at Augusta National when he was 2-under and things went like on Saturday and things went really bad. I love him. He's my guy, of course. Made friends with his parents at the Players. They were joking about how they check out the pod. So shout out McCarthy family if you're in here. They were like, you got more. They were like, we don't ever, when he was on your show, he was like, he never talks to us, but I learned more about him on your show than I do on the calls with him. But cool, full disclosure, I was trying to get him on before the Masters week to talk a little bit about his first experience at Augusta, and then that happened at Valero, and I'm like, maybe it's not the best time to ask you the next day to come on a podcast, so we'll save that for some other time. Gutted for him, but he'll be a FOMO on the card for sure.
How about Sepp Straka? I'm currently seeing
him. Don't have him, but what are your thoughts on him?
75-1 came third here a couple years back, and another guy that when you filter out for kind of these elite approach players from kind of 150-200, Straka rates sixth behind Scheffler, Hovland, Xander, Zalatoris, and Glover from 150-200 yards and strokes gained per shot. Also finished top 10 last week on approach to the Masters. Bermuda grass, big time field, positional golf course. Straka doesn't get enough credit for how accurately he drives the golf ball. And I feel like this is a nice spot for him to maybe pick off one, you know, came so close at Southwind a couple years back, has won at Honda, has won at, he didn't win, but he came second at Sanderson Farm. So these Bermuda tracks, these kind of more difficult Bermuda tracks, I like Sepp there. And then, I mean, I bet Shane Lowry, but again, I posted this morning at 75-1, it's down to 45. So that's got hit pretty hard. And then I bet Lucas Glover as well, who, again, you talk about tee to green play. You talk about reliability off the tee. Really, really stellar with the iron play as of recently. You know, I got him at 120-1. I think you can still find triple digits out there. But, yeah, Glover, of course, we know about the ball striking. It's metronomic. But sneakily, one of the kind of short game stats I am looking at is sand saves. A lot of the past champions here are inside the top 12 in sand saves. 80% of top five finishers have rated above field average. The bunkers are kind of the only spot around the greens at Harbor Town that actually provide a lot of peril. And Glover, 11th in the field in sand saves in 2024, fourth in greenside bunker proximity. So he's a sneaky good bunker player. And you get him on a golf course that really, again, takes a driver out of a lot of these longer guys' hands, a lot of approach shots from the same area. I think Glover can kind of can establish his class there. So it's been a lot of long shots for me, which is not my typical strategy at these kind of elevated events. But yeah, that's kind of the direction I'm going, and I might pick off a couple guys under 30 by week's end. But
love it, dude. I'll have my long shots video out on the Roto Baller YouTube page tomorrow. I'm going to take three guys. I probably already spoiled the beans, but go ahead and check that out tomorrow. I will have those up. Ian, it was an honor and a pleasure. You were awesome on the show. Tell everyone who's checking this out on YouTube or listening to the audio where they can find a little bit more of your content.
I appreciate it, Joe. Yeah, it's been good finally getting to talk to you. You know, I'm a kind of adopted snowbird. I've just moved down to South Florida a couple months ago. So we got to hit up a golf course at some point. But yeah. But yeah, man, it's been good being on. I'm obviously at Flag_Hunting. We do a podcast every week, both golf and NASCAR. So kind of dip our toes in both of the sports. My co-host Chris is our NASCAR analyst. I cover the golf. Tomorrow, big show for me personally is I've been a Spencer Aguiar fan for, again, as long as I've listened to Pat and Jeff, and he'll be coming on for the Heritage next tomorrow. So we'll have Joe on, of course, as soon as possible. And yeah, you can find me at Flag_Hunting. Obviously, a couple articles every week on RotoWaller, and make sure to go follow me. And, you know, obviously all the incredible writers you guys already know about between Joe, Spencer, Joe Nicely, Byron. I mean, it's an all-star cast. Matt Miller over there, who's a big friend, who does great work on Liv. He's been killing it over there recently. So. But yeah, man, Joe, good having me on, and do this again soon.
Great to have you on, man. Have a great night. I appreciate you. Thanks for changing up the time on me too and being flexible. It's been I'm ready to just eat and go to bed for like 12 hours. So thanks, buddy, for sticking with me.
Yes, sir. Take it easy, man.
Talk soon. All right, guys, quick final thoughts before I get out of here. Thank you all for supporting a lot of the Masters content. Really means a lot to me. Your guys, there were a couple of you that I met, so it is crazy to me. There's probably four or five, maybe six people throughout the week who came up to me there and introduced themselves. And I appreciate that. It's humbling. It's weird in a sense because, like, you know, when someone comes up to you and you're like, they know a lot about you, right? They follow you, but you don't know them. So it's an instantly like an awkward 20 seconds, but they were extremely cool. Thank you for coming up and saying what's up. It really means a lot to me, those guys who were out there in Vegas. I appreciate it. Thank you. Final thoughts. It was a great experience out there. And one thing that I really came to respect Pat Mayo for is this guy, and I talked a little bit about earlier, takes care of his team. So if you have a team, if you have whether it's a family, whether it's a business, if there's a team in which you are the leader, take care of those around you. Pat talked about sort of negotiating with Circa on his deal there. And his biggest thing was like, I need to bring my guys. I want you to take care of my producer. I want you to take care of my UFC guys. I'm bringing this guy from Florida. I'm bringing Jeff Feinberg. I need to make sure all these guys are taken care of. He took us to dinner every night. He bought bottles of wine. Like, he was super awesome to hang with, and he supports other people's stuff. Like, there are some people on Twitter who you won't catch them liking a single person outside of their company's post. I obviously don't work for Mayo Media Net. I obviously am at potentially like a competitor in the content space, and he was super cool to me, always supports stuff. You see him out there constantly bringing other people onto his platform to lift them up. Be one of those people. Be like Pat Mayo. If you've got a team, if you've got employees, make sure that they are as well taken care of as you when you go to attend these events, and they will stick by you. Those guys are fiercely loyal to him. There's a reason why Paul, there's a reason why Cody, there's a reason why Jeff, there's a reason why these guys have been there for years and had a million opportunities and not gone elsewhere. Take care of your team. Take care of yourself. I appreciate you guys for checking out Preferred Lines. My name is Joe Idoni. I hope you have a great week at the RBC Heritage. Best of luck. I'll catch you soon. I'm going to go get some sleep. I'm going to go get something to eat. Talk to you guys later. Thanks for hanging with me. Peace.